Well, it's March the 1st, and I have been warm in church. Not here. I've just been down to All Saints for their 9 o'clock, and I have to say I probably got a bit too warm, so I needed to take a few layers off for there, but I had to be prepared for all eventualities, and I was coming back here. Although it's not too bad, really, is it? I expect there's been a few of you, like me, when you have fish and chips, you just really enjoy putting the salt on, don't you? Catherine, our daughter, is at home this weekend, and one of her treats is to have fish and chips. I don't know why. In London, you don't seem to be able to get fish and chips, but here you can. So, salt, it really sort of enhances the flavour, doesn't it? And it's probably pretty bad for you as well, but we'll make a bit more about that in a minute. So today, thank you, if I can have the first picture, we're going to be looking at the next in our series of being fruitful on the front line. And we've been using the letter M to help us. We've looked at modelling godly character. We've looked at making good work. We've looked at ministering grace and love. And today we're looking at moulding culture. If you've missed any of the previous sermons, do have a look on the St. Matthew's website, and under the audio section, you can listen to most of them. But how do we go about moulding culture? What is culture? According to Derek Warlock, who was a former Archbishop of London, culture is the way that we do things round here. Culture is the way we do things round here. I did look up a few other definitions of culture, far too many words, some of them pretty big as well. So culture is the way we do things round here, and that's what we're going to work with. And each one of us is involved in loads of different cultures. We have the culture of our family circle, the culture of our friends, our social activities, we've got the culture of church, we've got the culture of the neighbourhood that we live in, the culture at work, whether that's paid work or voluntary work. I come across a few cultures in my day job in the co-op. There's the fairly typical shoplifter that you can often spot a mile off. And we also have, on far too many occasions, the culture of people being rude. Now, that's not just in retail, that's in lots of other aspects of life as well. And I read in the newspaper this week about the culture of being late. So apologies that I walked in late. But whether that's for school or church or social meeting, it just seems to happen. It seems to be the norm. And it seems to be expected or accepted. What does that say about your respect for the event or the people that you're going to, though? And we all belong to various different groups and settings. We all experience various different cultures. Culture, the way that we do things around here. But actually, we're not just called to be in those different cultures. We're called to be moulding them as well. The M word for this week, moulding. And so a definition of moulding is to influence or to direct. To influence or direct. Making a difference, really, in the settings that we find ourselves in. So the youth group that are meeting over in the Fletcher Centre at the moment are called MAD, Make a Difference. They probably already have the answer, don't they? In that Romans reading, Paul tells us we're not to be conformed any longer to the pattern of the world. And we know, don't we, that lots of the behaviour and the customs and the culture are usually selfish and maybe even corrupt. And each one of us is called to make a difference in the communities that we find ourselves in. we should be bringing a touch of God into them, pointing people to God, pointing people to God's way of doing things, being a signpost to God in what they see in us, in the words and in our actions. So how do we influence, or how do we make a difference to the cultures that we find ourselves in? Obviously, looking at what Jesus did is a good place to start. And in today's gospel reading from Matthew 5, which is part of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is calling the people to be in the world and to be like salt and like light. And we know, don't we, that both salt and light make an incredible difference in the places and the things that we're in. Salt enhances, doesn't it? It enhances the taste of those chips that I had last night. But it is also a preservative. Salt heals. Salt can also be an irritant. And if salt loses its saltiness, it is of no good. And light, well, light can be a warning, perhaps like a lighthouse. Light can be welcoming, house lights after you've been walking in the dark. It can guide us like a torchlight. But above all, light is visible. It can be seen. And as Christians, we're called to be all of these things in our communities, in our culture today, as we bring God's values, as we bring a godly way of doing things into these situations. And again, looking at Jesus, Jesus was like this. The way that Jesus treated the outcasts that he came across in society, the way that he treated women, the sinner, the physically and the mentally ill, the tax collectors, he gave them his time, he gave them his attention, he healed them, he accepted them, he encouraged them, he treated each one as an individual. He didn't look down on any of them. And we see Jesus willing to challenge the culture of the day. When Mary came and sat at his feet, she was listening, she was learning, despite the fact that it was usually only the men who sat and listened at the teacher's feet, and it was the women who did all the domestic preparations. But Jesus accepted her, and he encouraged her to stay. He didn't tell her to get back to the household chores, even though that's what Martha wanted. If we go on to the next picture, we might find we've just got some picture of Martha and Mary. And thank you, then the next one. But Jesus actually, although he accepted what Mary was doing, he didn't accept what the Pharisees and what the teachers, they thought themselves so important. They were only concerned with keeping the law. They were out to impress. But they actually didn't have any compassion for those who were struggling or ill or poor or different. Jesus was harsh in what he said to those Pharisees and leaders. And in chapter 23 of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus calls the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, he calls them hypocrites. He calls them hypocrites 6 times in that section. And he also calls them snakes and a brood of vipers. Jesus was challenging their culture, where they thought they had it made, and they thought they could do what they liked, and they couldn't. And there's other people in the Bible as well who challenged the culture that they found themselves in. Daniel, when he was taken as captive into Babylon, eventually, the number of times he stood up for his faith, he didn't eat all that rich food. He continued to pray. He wouldn't worship the idol. He stood up in the culture he found himself in. And Nebuchadnezzar, the king, ended up praising God because everything he does and all his ways are just. Daniel changed the culture that he found himself in. And Esther, as a Jew, she needed to speak up in the culture she found herself in, where the Jews were going to be destroyed. She needed to speak up and make a difference. So we might be finding on the different front lines that we have that God is challenging us to make a difference. It might be to speak up for the ones who are struggling, to care for them and to seek their best. It might be to encourage people with all the good things that are happening, or it might be to speak out against those who've got it wrong or who are unfair or bullying or cheating or out to get just good for themselves. In the I newspaper at the beginning of this week, there was an article there that I read. It was in the religion section, and it was entitled God Squad, the UK's worst football team, is also the nicest. Thank you. And it was an article. It was an article about a football team, a Christian football team, that insists that football is about far more than the results. They've had 56 straight defeats. The last time we won, says the manager, was in September 2013. But our opponents did turn up with only 9 men, and then they had their goalie sent off. They won that one, and that was the last one they won. But it wasn't always like that, you know. To begin with, the manager, he'd been a Leeds supporter. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. He'd worked in a slaughterhouse. He'd argued with the ref. And for 2 seasons, they won promotion in their football league. And then things changed. He became a father, he became a Christian, and he became a forklift driver with an ethos, because he decided that he wanted to get the players back to enjoying themselves, to become friends with each other. And then he let some players join the team who'd been struggling to get into any other team. I wonder why. He put a charity logo on their shirt sleeves. And his team talk for their previous match that they'd lost 15-1, the midweek match, and his team talk following that was referring to the amazing game that they'd had. And he talked about all the positives. I'm not sure that will go down generally with most football teams, but he made a difference to that culture. And the goalie went off saying what an amazing game he'd had. He'd made some really good saves. And he'd made some really good saves. He'd also let 8 goals in. But they were positive about their football match. A difference to that culture. Thank you. We see local initiatives, don't we, that are working on changing the culture that we find ourselves in Ipswich. Thank you. We've got town pastors and the night shelter to Letha Coombe and things to do with fair trade. It's fair trade week these 2 weeks. I always think it's really unfair to have fair trade week and they do such excellent chocolate during Lent. Never understand it. But there's lots of things happening, aren't there? Individually, locally, nationally, internationally. And I'm going to challenge each one of you to share with somebody else at the end of the service something that is sort of changing the culture. It may be something to do with these events. It may be something in your workplace. It may be something in your family. It may be something you've seen, like this football team. Share with somebody as you are having your coffee at the end of the service. One front line, though, that we are all going to be involved in if you are over 18, and that is nearly all of us, is in the coming months we have an election campaign coming up. You may have noticed before Christmas even, people were referring to the election happening in May. And the election will give us a good opportunity of discussion with family and friends and work colleagues. And politics does affect our lives. This advert in 2008 said, if you don't do politics, there's not much that you do. How true that is, I don't know. But politics does affect our lives. And this year, the Church of England has got involved. And hopefully you will have noticed on the news, and there's been some articles about it, the House of Bishops have produced a letter, Who is My Neighbour? Now, it's a bit like Paul's letters in the New Testament. It's a letter, but it is 56 pages long. And you do need to understand some big words on occasion, but I would recommend that you read it. So Tammy's kindly printed out this one in large print, because it's easy to show as a at the front here. But she's also printed out another two. And if you want to have a look at it, if you want to take it, please do collect them off me at the end of the service. I don't really need three. If you've got internet, Google it and you can read it on the internet. So in this letter from the House of Bishops, they're suggesting that instead of treating politics and this general election as just extending our culture of consumerism and voting for our own benefit, we should actually focus on the common good and on the flourishing of the community and vote accordingly. They're not telling us who to vote for. 56 pages does not tell you who you should vote for. But it's asking us to consider the culture, the situations that we find ourselves in, the local situation, and to choose a party that promises to meet those needs and then to hold them accountable. You may have seen again in the national press that this letter has been picked up by the national press because it includes a reference to the recommendation that people are paid a living wage. And the living wage is obviously a wage that helps you have a reasonable standard of living, and it is higher than the minimum wage. There was also, of course, the revelation that there are several cathedrals and maybe a few churches who advertise jobs at less than the living wage. So it's obviously work in progress. But election issues are likely to be part of our front lines over these next few months. John Shaw's going to come up any moment now. And he's just going to speak a little bit about how he feels about this. He's read it. He's recommended that all the men who went to the prayer breakfast have read it. I'm not going to ask who went to the prayer breakfast and who's read it. But it's obviously going to, you know, it's going to play quite an important part in our life over these next few months. And it's an opportunity to be able to say about how we will be considering the issues and how we will be thinking about voting. John.
So Ruth's given you a fairly good introduction to it. It comes in a handy A5 format if you want to print it out as well. And it's give great introduction about how it sets out how we should think about politics and moving on from thinking about what it means for me, but what does it mean for our community, and seeing ourselves as part of one of many communities, and our nation as one of many nations. And last week I was down at Sanctuary, and I got talking to a guy, and he was obviously into politics. He'd been a councillor, apparently, in Ipswich. And you know, I talked to him and said, well, this is the vision that the House of Bishops have set out about how we should approach politics. And he was really intrigued, and he fully understood the idea that we don't just think about ourselves as individuals, but it was about thinking of community. And he assured me he was going to go away and have a look at it. So for me, it was very positive in enabling me to engage in that conversation and to show that the church, has a novel way of looking at the world that's different from normal culture. And so for me, the criticism of the Sun that, we haven't... not everybody's in the church is doing everything that the House of Bishops set out. That was really encouraging that they'd obviously taken the time to hold us accountable. If we're holding politicians accountable, it's right that the media hold us accountable for what we're doing. And a challenge to say, well, we're not at the end of the journey yet. We haven't reached that vision, but that we're on the way. And we as a church and other churches need to commit to that vision and make the sacrifice to ensure that we can pay people the living wage. Maybe not this year or next year, but that's our vision. So I found it really useful as a way of looking at politics and policies. And I've taken those thoughts onto my front lines, and I encourage you to as well.
So perhaps when you're having a chat after coffee about things that you're seeing, changing culture in the areas you're involved in, speak to one of the men and see if they've read this, and perhaps speak to others of us in the next few weeks after we have read it as well. The report states, the privileges of living in a democracy mean that we should use our votes thoughtfully, prayerfully, and with the good of others in mind, not just our own interests. And that's moulding culture, influencing the way that we do things round here. And we're all called to it. Let's pray.